I was just mentally trying to get rid of all those corporate meetings of the last week, which I had not enjoyed. And that for me was an aha effect, like, okay, if I stay in this corporate and if I grow higher in the corporate ladder or hierarchy, I will have more and just more of those corporate meetings. Is that what I want? And I realized, hey, I do have a career problem here on the long term.
You are a driven international professional or manager, have achieved quite a bit already, but are asking yourself from time to time, what do I really want? How do I want to work and live? Then this is your podcast. I'm Gina Friedrich, career and life coach for people who want to actively shape their future. Every second Thursday, I release interviews for you with inspiring, successful, as well as renowned international personalities from the world of business, NGO, and sports. They all will share with you what these questions mean to them, how they handled obstacles in their lives, and shaped their journey to where they are today. You are curious and don't want to miss anything? Sign up for this podcast right here. And now, let yourself be inspired on your very personal journey towards the future that you wish for. Konnichiwa from Ishigaki, Japan. Being so far away from home, I am more than excited to have you here with me today. For this week's episode 37, I got the chance to speak with Joost Sanders just yesterday. He is a diversely experienced international business leader who holds an MBA and Master of Science and spent decades in the fields of finance, commercial, operations, products, and export, just to name a few. After leaving the CEO position at Stanley Black & Decker in Germany, he started his own business in Düsseldorf last year with the name Silencio. You will hear about that later. Joost very openly shares how he was offered one big challenge after another by the EU president of his former employer and how he turned around the crisis that the company was facing at that time. You'll hear how leaving the finance path was the hardest decision for him, but how suddenly understanding the ground reality of employees and customers inspired him very much. We talk about the impact of strength-based management and, by that, highly increased engagement rates and productivity. And Joost takes us back to his key aha moment, realizing that he couldn't stand the cover-your-ass mentality on the long term and decided to leave the corporate world, a decision not everyone could understand. We talk about counting the first days in a new role, his implemented promotional carousel, gaining a startup DNA, and much more. Ready? Here he is. Joost, I'm super happy to have you here with us today.
Same here, Gina. I think it was really a great conversation we had the first time we met.
I
remember most of the words and phrases, so I'd love to have the call today.
Yeah, I was actually super happy when you said that you're up for this interview as well, because we were talking about some very interesting, inspiring insights from your path so far. So yeah, I'm already excited being able to share that with the listeners now. Did you have a good start into the day so far?
Yeah, I think we're really lucky that it's sunny those days in Germany, working from home. But the sunny days are a great motivation to go for a quick run in the morning. So that's a great way to start the day.
Oh, you did that already?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. Not bad. Actually, it's evening here in Japan. I am calling you from Japan right now, where we are. Yeah, I would not say stuck, but we decided to stay here a bit longer, given the situation in Europe, but we could talk about that a bit later. But yeah, it's evening here, so almost time for dinner. I will not go for a run now anymore, but thanks for the inspiration. I might start my day with that tomorrow then. So Joost, maybe to start with a question that gives our listeners a bit more information about yourself. Why don't you tell us, who is Joost Sanders?
Great question, Gina. So my name Joost comes from the Netherlands. That's where I'm born. I'm currently 43 years old. I progressed through some corporate careers of American companies. I like to do some sports, like I just mentioned, go for an early run. I'm not a mountaineer or alpinist, but I loved and I recall the moment, which was important for my career as well, I think, that I was standing on the Matterhorn in Switzerland, on the top of it.
I do have a son who is 14 years old, and of course trying to cope with the current corona crisis and the school courses as well. And I love projects. I did some studies. Actually, one which is interesting now, I have a master with a main subject in natural disaster management. Oh. But more related to hurricanes compared to the current virus which is going on. So actually, I also do like the kind of complex challenges, which also throughout my career in business, it appears that I got a nose or the skills to catch up roles which have been challenging and where people not always had success prior to me taking those roles. So I think the crisis situations, it triggers kind of a rational thinking in me. And as long as things are rational, I love to work and make decisions, have the right set of data to base the decisions on. So from that angle, I think I'm quite rational and also basically kind of performing well in situations where there is a healthy amount of pressure to do the right thing.
Wow. Thanks for this overview. Now we all got the chance to get to know you a little bit better. And you were mentioning that you're from the Netherlands and you mentioned the word challenge. You live in Germany now, in Düsseldorf, actually. And yeah, I was wondering, what was the biggest challenge throughout, changing countries, moving from one country to another for work and life?
I think in challenges from a career perspective, for a long time, I was pursuing a finance career. And actually, a year before, or 2 years before I moved to Germany, our European president, he asked me if I was not willing to take commercial responsibility for Europe, which by then was a $750 million revenue stream, which had been shrinking for 5 to 7% per year. And so I came from finance, not being the super extrovert, maybe from a finance perspective a little bit, going into the commercial piece, and that was a huge challenge on which I really hesitated. And he convinced me, and I said yes in the end. And that was actually a great point, because I did that for 2 years, and all of a sudden, because of a lot of great work that we did as a team in different countries, the results actually started to turning around. So instead of having minus 5 or 7%, we delivered 3% of growth.
Wow.
And that actually triggered the next question. So Europe was growing by then in 2015, with the exception of Germany. And so my European president came again. And he said, well, it's good that we grow in Europe, but not in Germany. Would you not like to go to Germany as a general manager? And at that stage, so December 15, I got kind of my one-way ticket, as I like to phrase it, to get on the ground in Düsseldorf. We had by then originally 450 employees. And yeah, we started growing the business from there. In doing so, the business was not performing well. So a lot of people management, conversations with employees, with customers. And I think the challenge, because that was your question, the challenge was really time management in crisis, because you always like to have a perfect set of data and meetings and agenda. But in crisis situations, you typically don't have that. And I think those challenges, they really helped me developing my skills, raising my awareness of my strengths, and also helped me directing for the next steps that I've been setting in 2019.
Yeah, what helped you to actually do that, to gain this value out of a crisis, as you've just described?
Well, I think because of the crisis, it was really like leaving your comfort zone big time. So you have the language barrier Our business typically was not a business of highly proficient English-speaking employees. So you try to work with people, build trust relations with people. And I think for me, this experience showed me to myself that actually my people management skills, my interaction skills, even if your language skills are not great, how do you deal with people? How do you observe signals? We now have a phone call, so we don't see each other. And I always highly value the face-to-face contact. I actually ask people, you know, let's go to customer, and on the way back of the customer meeting, let's go to McDonald's, have a chat with them. And that's really where you hear from employees, if you have three or four layers of management in between, that's where you hear what the ground reality is. And the ground reality for most employees is just so important if you can help as a leader to improve their daily ground reality with very little things.
Do you have an example?
Yeah, an example of a ground reality is that I visited in Stuttgart a customer, which was a bank, and I will not name the name of the customer, with both a technician and a commercial guy. And the customer actually explained me why our technician had to enter the customer's address two times in his PDA. The PDA is kind of the smartphone that the technician uses to register what he is doing. But he has to enter manually two times. He's working, he has to take off his gloves or his tools, he has to type in on a relatively small phone. Yeah, kind of a lot of data, and doing it twice, actually, very simple. And sometimes you think, hey, how stupid is it? But I think as leaders, we only realize once we are on the ground and the customer is asking, hey, why is your employee doing this twice? And why should I pay for this work twice? So very simple. We went back to the IT team in the business and we said, okay, why is it? Can we change it? And I think 3 or 4 months later, the IT team had delivered the improvement that actually the technicians did not have to enter the customer data, not even once. So we had to do much more of these things. We did a lot of workshops, and we really did a lot of what we call operational excellence improvements in this area. And then it was interesting. Of course, the customers get more happy because they see the technicians are more happy with the tools. We got more jobs. We started to grow revenue. We had less unproductive time. So the margins and the profit started to improve. So it was a real cycle of basically momentum that you start triggering.
Was that something that you were always practicing also throughout roles that you were holding before? Or yeah, how did you start developing this process?
Yeah, great question. So until 2014, actually, I was more in finance roles. So not at all. I was not in the field. And I guess because I was so long in finance, where you more look at your computer than that you speak with customers, I think I was just loaded with motivation, you know, to figure out, guys, if the numbers of those businesses have been so bad, what is the ground reality? And I think I was not aware. I think now, a couple of years later, I just wonder even where did the energy come from? because I burned a lot of kilometers and energy on those customer meetings. But it was so inspiring to see the response both from customers and from our employees. Say, guys, hey, we're finally changing things that might have been needed to change 10 years ago.
Yeah, what a huge impact that in the end, as you have said, was of amazing value to all people involved.
I think what people realized was like, oh, hey, we do have a managing director. He is not isolated in his ivory tower. I think that's kind of the anecdote. I even recall in the beginning there was some resistance. A managing director who likes at least to have 3 to 4 customer visits to see a branch. I don't know, probably it hadn't been much of the culture before, but I think it raised the awareness to the employees that I was caring about their jobs. It raised the awareness to the customers that I did care about the customer satisfaction. And it was a people business.
Was there maybe, a decision that you would call the hardest that you ever had to make throughout this journey then? That you were actually, experiencing joining this company, being the CEO in Germany?
No, I think that the hardest decision was actually in 2014 to leave my finance path. And then I think also the hard part was end of 2015 when my boss asked me, well, Joost, that German business, we know it hasn't been doing well for 10 years and you've had a couple of predecessors and we offer you this opportunity. That's typical and great American to pitch it. It's an opportunity for your development to see if you can improve the situation on the ground. And I really had to think a little bit and I was like, well, if those people before me didn't succeed and I had a lot of respect for them, who am I to make it work? You know, I still had kind of a little bit of a Dutch Bescheidenheit, we say, I think, in German. But then I thought, well, you know, if my boss trusts me, I will do well. You know, I'll go with it. And anyhow, it's an American company, so if you say no, then that's not a good thing either. So that was a difficult moment. And I actually remember that I was counting the days. I landed on the ground on November 26, 2015. I still remember kind of coming out of my one-way ticket. I said, okay, today is day 10. Then it's day 20, day 30, day 50, 60. People started to ask me in Germany, Joost, why are you counting the days? And I said, well, I'm counting until day 100. And I have one main objective in this crisis situation. And that is, after 100 days, I need to make sure I still have enough energy for the second 100 days, which are coming afterwards. Mm-hmm. And so I think it raised also the sincerity of the task at hand for the whole team in Germany. Because that was only going to work if the managers, if the technicians, if the commercial guys would support some of the decisions and the new directions we were rolling out. So, yeah, that was really a tough phase, very challenging. But I think now with hindsight, it's also great to speak about it roughly 4 years later. So learningful, totally learningful. So many great moments, great people that I met. And I think for your self-awareness of what you can do, what you cannot do, I didn't know it before. Now I look back and I feel good and I learned that actually what I like most professionally is working with customers, working with employees. One of the discussions we had was about the talent management. So there were some older structures in terms of managers in branches and regions, etc. And people who had done the job for 10, 20 years and said, well, we've always done this for 10, 20 years. And well, in that case, for me, it was quite easy to say, well, it didn't work because the business was losing customers, it was losing employees, it was losing money. So it was an easy argument to say, guys, it's nice that you did it for 20 years, but we've got to change because otherwise there is no future. And then I think what was really challenging was to get the right people in the right job, in the right branch, in the right role, internally, which was my preference compared to go hire people from outside. But how do you start making a promotional carousel? Or you start changing people from one job into another job. The sales guys, they would be pitching about operational guys or the other way around. Mm-hmm. How do you get out of that dreadlock? And sometimes it's as easy just to put a person on the other side. So if somebody had always been complaining about sales, well, you know what? Let's talk with him. Let's work with him. If he has so many complaints, list it up. And then spend 2 months of talking and then ask, okay, now you made a nice list of everything that doesn't work on the other side. Would you like to go over? And you go and fix it. that was kind of, well, that was not historically done in this business unit. But I started doing that actually quite a lot. But then you need to see if somebody else did the job on the commercial guy, if he is a good guy and he has a hardworking mindset, can you help him to stay in the company rather than do the easy thing, try to get him get rid, which is never nice? And can you try to motivate him to do the same, but on the operational guy? So then you have a carousel of two people, which is fairly easy. But of course, in a business, you have the financial department, you have the order intake, you have people who make specifications. So normally such a carousel would be 5 to 6 people, and it was really a lot of time investment. And also, I really loved it, speaking with people who had been in a role for 10 years, trying to motivate them to do something else. Some people would love to finally do something else. They really saw it as a great opportunity. A lot of people, of course, would say, well, I do it already 10 years. Why can I not do it another 10 years? So really doing that personal people management, I loved it. And a lot of people were very grateful to me, actually. They said, well, Joost, all the people management that you did and the focus on people management. I also asked my managers, you know, listen, make development plans. And in corporate, you know, we were always good in saying, okay, we had once a year a corporate development discussion with an employee and we file it for the system. But, you know, that's not the clue about people management. I think for me, I learned more about people management at that McDonald's, speaking with a certain person, as having a face-to-face meeting in your office where the other one is fully prepared, has a list already in front of him, what he wants. I think it was really the field trips which gave me a much better understanding of the strengths and weaknesses of the people, and also for their own self-reflection. I think there is a lot of tools to give people fact-based feedback. I say, okay, you were with the customer, you raised this issue, this is what you, how you dealt with it at the end. Was it right? Was it wrong? Would you do it different? Yes or no? And, you know, would you do it rather from the commercial side or rather from the operational side? Maybe you have your strength somewhere else.
I think it's amazing the way you did it. Really like focusing on the strength of someone and then building on that and trying to develop that and trying to see where this could actually be of great value, maybe even on the other part or the other side or another seat in this carousel. I think it's amazing to implement that. This probably made a huge difference, I can imagine.
It really made a huge difference. The as I mentioned, I'm quite rational. So the employee fluctuation, which is called the attrition rate, in 2015, before I started the job, was 28%. So of all 100, of each 100 employees, 28 people would quit on their job on a yearly basis. And of course, for 450 people, it would be more. And actually, 2 years later, that percentage went down to 3%. So I think people really appreciated that you know, push on trying to fix the critical things for customers, but also for employees, and focusing on the positive skills of people. Say, hey, you accelerate here. One of the things we did, because I knew I was going to be short, there had been a lot of restructuring before I came to Germany. So in the management layers, there was a lot of skill set gaps. So I opened a talent pool, and a talent pool is, I actually copied it from our CFO in the US and adapted it really to the situation in Germany. And I was looking for people aged from 25 until late 30s. Of which I kind of figured out, okay, they're motivated, despite, yeah, the business not doing well, they always kept a positive mindset, looking forward, trying to improve. And we started to invite them, I think, on a quarterly basis, and have them doing some workshops, having an external coach, actually, and then also go for dinner in the evening and get their feedback. And I think 50% of those people, in the end, got into managerial jobs where they started to improve. And that also helped to the domino effect from a motivational perspective, from a results perspective. So really that people piece, wow, I really learned that in Germany and I loved it and the power of it is so strong. And it motivated me. I think I got extra motivation and energy out of doing that. And that was an innovation boost or source, which I had never seen before I actually went to Germany.
I think it's super interesting. You probably know there are different Gallup studies, Gallup analysis, and there's one actually saying that if people are able to use their top strength, which of course need to be identified first, that if you're able to use your top strength at work every day, that it will not only lead to higher satisfaction, it will also increase I cannot say this word.
Productivity.
I'm sorry. It will also lead to increased productivity by 8% of an individual, and I think even 13 or 14% if you have a team that is actually managed based on strength and are able to leverage them in a day-to-day life. So I think, there are even numbers proving that you did everything right, and it's just nice to hear this success story of yours. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks, Gina. And actually, so Gallup was one of the tools that we used.
So we did measure Gallup across our employees. So I had a very high participation rate of, I think, 87% of the employees did participate. Mm-hmm. And the results improved also with, I don't remember exactly, 23 or 26% compared to the year before. And the same was visible in the P&L results. So we got more orders from customers, we got more revenues, we got more profits. So really, I'm a very strong believer in Gallup, if measured well. And also all the measurements that you can put in place to help people using their strengths in doing their job.
Absolutely. I'm actually right now in the final phase of becoming a Gallup strength coach. So that's why I also believe in this tool. And I think there's so much power in this for every individual in regards to improving happiness in their day-to-day and work life and being satisfied. And I mean, things are changing, right? The world is changing in general. Let's put Corona aside. But I think a couple of decades ago, what people wanted was a lot of money, security, a nice house. And what they want now is a good job. I think the latest results show that this is what people are striving for. And if you are lucky working for a company which is actually focusing on strength of each employee rather than only trying to work and develop weaknesses and trying to send people to trainings to actually decrease weaknesses rather than focusing on the strength and building on them and trying to bring people to excellence in something that they anyways have in them and that just needs to be focused on and leveraged more, then I think it makes a huge difference for a team and also on an individual basis. But you have just perfectly described how you did it and what an impact that had. So good to hear another success story.
Thank you, Gina. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. I do believe there is more opportunity and also more fun and also more money to earn by defining tasks and opportunities around the strength of an individual rather than trying a person that he does a job with actually he doesn't have the great skills for it and the job or task at hand is not really mapped. So you can still leave a person in a job, but in that case, I think the tasks need to be kind of redefined that they better fit the skill set. Because, of course, there are some negative competences or competences where we're not good at, and we will always have that, and we should not ignore them. But from a priority perspective, I think it is just much smarter and goes so much faster to define tasks that fit on the strengths rather than on the weaknesses. So
Yeah, and just increasing the awareness for them, and also, of course, addressing them, as you've said, but using the strength to address these weaknesses. And quite often, actually, what I experienced also is that a weakness could also simply be a blind spot of an actual strength not being applied in the right way yet, right? I don't know if you also have experienced that, but also there, a good manager is key to support an individual on developing this view on, the strength-based approach and this awareness and to see the opportunities in that and building on them. Yeah, super exciting.
Yeah, that's where I'm actually grateful to. I mean, I've had many bosses in my corporate career, and actually a couple of them very good. But the guy who sent me to Germany, he must have seen that there was kind of a blind spot because my people management skills as a finance guy, at least not to a big extent. You're in a finance team, but, you know, not highly exposed to commercial or to customers. And he must have seen I had kind of a blind spot, but he gave me the confidence with that blind spot actually to turn it into a strength. I mean, I was not aware of this skill or competence 10 years ago, not to the extent as I am today. So that's really where I'm also grateful for a lot of the corporate managers, what you can learn from them, and also having, you know, their sponsorship in terms of taking new opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. So now we talked a lot about this, this position that you were holding. I mean, you spent many, many years in that company. But I was just wondering, throughout your whole career, and knowing what you're doing now, and we will come to that in a moment, was there maybe an aha moment that you could share that really brought you closer to answer the question of what do I really want?
Yeah, I think that was after 2 years on the ground in Germany, so say 2017, the end of it, you know, the business was doing better, the team started to develop. There were still a lot of hot spots of concern, but the trend had turned in a positive direction. I started to wonder, like, okay, even if you are a CEO of such a company in Germany, I think there was an aha moment that I learned that, okay, the interfacing and looking for solutions with customers and with employees, I really liked it. And I started to get pretty disturbed by corporate meetings. We would have a lot of video conferences and people would ask me not to go see customers because there was a corporate video conference. And in the corporate ladder, I think, I don't know if that's appropriate for this podcast, there is this word of the cover your ass mentality. We can skip
cover
it later
ass.
If needed. In decision making, it kind of means like, well, before you make a decision, you have to speak to 10 or 20 people because you need the alignment, the buy-in. And that's kind of, nobody wants to make a decision. They are afraid. They don't know if they are in the right role to make that decision. And that's why they cover their ass. So they need to check it with other people. It's a nice word for bureaucracy.
It really is a nice word.
The bigger the company becomes. And I started, you know, because I was in a rhythm. The work I did in Germany was on kind of a rotation. If I would go to Stuttgart one day, I would be back in Stuttgart 1 month later, speak with the same people, the same customer, check if all the actions were executed, yes or no. So I had a tremendous travel agenda. And then after a year and a half, the results started positive. So people at corporate outside of Germany, they started to ask, Joost, we want you to be in this meeting, we want you to be in that meeting. And my time consumption started to shift into 40-50% of non-German related activity. And I really felt unhappy with it, terribly unhappy. And in the weekend, I used to go swimming, and I figured out in the swimming pool that there had been days, you know, the first hour of swimming on a Saturday morning, I was just mentally trying to get rid of all those corporate meetings of the last week, which I had not enjoyed. And that for me was an aha effect, like, okay, if I stay in this corporate and if I grow higher in the corporate ladder or hierarchy, I will have more and just more of those corporate meetings. Is that what I want? Mm-hmm. So that was not just swimming one day. It was a couple of times, a couple of weeks, and actually a couple of months. And I realized, hey, I do have a career problem here mm-hmm. on the long term. So I need to figure out a solution.
Yeah. How did you do that then? What was the next step you took actually to find an answer to that question?
I think you did another podcast that I listened into. It's not always an active action. It is kind of a sequence of events. So I started to think, okay, what do I do? And one of the conversations I had somewhere in that period, somebody asked me, can you define for me the next role in this business globally or at a European level that you think you would like to do? Mm-hmm. Well, that was a great question.
Mm-hmm. A big question.
That was a big question, absolutely. And I also read a study, actually, so I always like to read a little bit. And there had been a study done by a guy in the Netherlands who compared the typical CEO profile of a multinational to an entrepreneur of his own business. But the big differences between those profiles are that the CEO of a Fortune 500 or a DAX company, he is investing much more time in stakeholder management compared to customer and innovation, mm-hmm. which is logical if you speak about it, because you have your shareholders, etc. So I think that study and the question helped me to actually come to the answer that, well, probably my next job should not be at a big corporate. And then I figured out, okay, that's tricky. Because, you know, at corporate, you get a nice salary, you get a nice car. I had a discussion with my brother-in-law. He said, Joost, do you really consider a startup? And are you going to walk with a T-shirt like, okay, I have a startup, and are you not going to come with your nice German limousine anymore for the family meetings? Are you going to travel by tram and train? I said, well, I don't know if it's that extreme. But yeah, so I had a kind of lot of conversations with people. And in the end, I made the decision and said, okay, I'm going to start something. I'm going to start something for myself from scratch. Just totally at the bottom again, learn everything from scratch and start building it up from there.
So two questions are in my head. What did it do to you to hear someone reacting like this? I mean, I also went through this a couple of times in my professional life because I've made a lot of turns and really starting from scratch again and also going back to university and then also in the end starting my own business. Yeah, how did it feel hearing this? And also, how did you then in the end still manage to focus on what it is that you want and not having these reactions, words of others affecting you?
Yeah, so very good. So what I realized is that in terms of my network, I needed to get DNA of the startup scene, just like I needed to get DNA of the corporate scene 20 years ago. But now it was the other way around. I said, okay, if I'm going to do this, I need to be surrounded with people who do the same, who have the same mindset, say, hey, I want to start something for myself. Because, you know, opinions are everywhere in your social circle, at work. And I think, at least in my case, I do get motivated. So I think what this remark did to me was it raised the awareness on, okay, I'm going to change something. It is obviously perceived as a radical change. So thank you for this comment. I see it a little bit as a mirror, and I can only get stronger out of it. And how do I get stronger out of it? And so I really started surrounding myself with networks that focus on startups, doing startup seminars, or going to California, to San Francisco, and really Yeah, making sure that you are aware that there will be people who see that a big change. So I think that awareness was very important, but also take the actions, change the literature that you're reading, have different contacts, go out again, and surround yourself with people who kind of breathe the same DNA.
Yeah, what a good advice for everyone who might face such a situation. So, Jo Stewart, you have a huge diverse experience. Yeah, also chose to take different turns throughout your career. And now you have your own business. And maybe you want to tell us what actually drove you then in the end to start what you're doing right now.
Yeah, sure. So I think what I realized in Germany was like the tools that you have as an employee to focus better on your work, that always motivated me. And in the 20 years of career, I was in different offices. I actually made a list. I think I've been in probably 13 different offices. Some of them were open space, some of them were closed, some of them were 20 in a room. And personally, I always got a little bit distracted. If you sit two persons in a room, the other one is calling, you try to work and you do concentrated work with numbers or some strategic stuff where you need concentration, the phone call of the other person does distract. And I had an employee as well in my job in Germany who actually went sick for probably a month because he had been working in open office and with a lot of noise and stress. And
for everyone really, right?
No, exactly. And he was the key account manager with the biggest volume. So that had a very negative impact as well. So the open office is the WeWork, New Work is really new concept or new. It's a couple of years old, but there are a couple of negative effects related to that. And I figured out like, okay, the whole trend of noise canceling is kind of providing a solution in a very nice and gentle way to people who do concentrated work in a co-space. And so I have selected a product group and working actually with the acoustic engineers as well from some of the suppliers that provides what I would call silence at request. By having right noise cancelling headphone, you can work and concentrate in your office. You can switch off the noises around. And back to what you mentioned about Gallup, it's very interesting. There is another KPI, which is critical for P&L, which is your illness rate of a business. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of work done on illnesses created by noise. And noise can be a side conversation that somebody has just 2 or 3 meters from your desk, which can trigger you making a mistake. And you have to correct the mistake because you're not concentrated. It can trigger annoyance. It can trigger extra energy because you like to concentrate more. Because you invest more energy, you will lose that energy somewhere else. And there are a lot of studies that say that there are a lot of heart diseases, blood diseases created by this noise that tears down productivity rates. So I'm really focusing on helping companies to improve productivity, to improve the P&L, to improve the results by being very vocal. For example, as an employer, you can provide a noise-canceling headphone to your employees who will then be much more satisfied with the work. They will make less mistakes. They will be less often ill. So that's the business I'm working on. I think 6-7 months ago I started. So it's really early days, but I get a lot of positive feedback from people who say, well, it's very interesting that you start tackling this area and try to find solutions.
Absolutely. And I mean, I'm sure that many people listening now are also working in open space offices. And I think I could not have made it through, the last six years of working for international companies, or also for this foundation I was working for, also working in open space, like I could not have made it through that time without my high quality noise cancellation headphones. Because, I mean, you can decide, right? There are moments where maybe it's good to take them off, but still you have the opportunity to really shut everything down around you. And to me, it's super important to be able to concentrate and not being distracted by phone calls, by other people talking. And this happens automatically, right? But some people are really suffering from that. And I know many, many of them. And in the last organization I was working for, I remember when I started walking in with these headphones, I kind of felt stupid because, I mean, not stupid, but I was the only one at that time. And some people started telling me like, ah, Gina, you're not so interested in what we are doing. And if our CEO is talking on the phone to someone, you're not so interested in hearing what is happening there. And so that was actually a stamp I got through that. But then 1 month after the next, I saw more and more people actually buying them on their own. And I think it's just an amazing thing if an employer offers this and gives this opportunity of being in silent mode whenever it's needed. And we all have tasks where we need to concentrate. So exciting times in general, if it's still like, yeah, a startup. And I was just wondering, I mean, now we're all facing a very special time. And I think almost everyone is affected somehow on a personal or professional level. And everything came so sudden. And my husband and I, we've traveled to Japan 3 weeks ago. And at that time in Germany, everything was still quite relaxed. And then it changed. We, despite the fact that our flights got canceled, we actively decided to stay here because, I mean, anyways, everything is kind of working online only right now. And I can, as a coach, I can work with my clients also via online tools. And I was just wondering, how do you experience this situation right now? Yeah, maybe on a personal and professional level. Is there maybe something you would like to share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think I'll take a positive for my own situation in the morning because I'm not commuting. You know, instead of commuting, I go for a run. So actually that's good as long as the weather is nice. And we've been terribly lucky with the weather 3 days in a row, the highest amount of sun. So that's really the one of the good sides. Of course, it's very challenging, you know, not to go networking actively, the face-to-face, which always you can do a lot of things remote, also over video, etc. But I think whether it's the smell of people or, I don't know, the excitement that you have in face-to-face meetings, there is always a need. A human being is a social animal or social being and likes to interface. So, and I really have a lot of respect for people who might have 2-3 children at home, sit in an apartment of maybe only 80 square meters or 100 square meters, whatever it is, and not going to school for the kids, hardly go outside for the kids. I think those people, I hope they deal well, as good as they can in this crisis. Or I think here also the people who don't have a roof, it's easy to tell them stay at home if you don't have a home. Mm-hmm. So I think there is really tough times for a lot of people in the society. On the other side, there is a lot of opportunities for more digitization. So I think there's a huge opportunity for innovation. And I think in terms of remote work, there is a lot of advantages that companies see. Okay, people can work remote. There is no need to commute. There is much here in North Rhine-Westphalia, of course, much less traffic on the road. So the air quality is improving. So there are so many things which are changing, and I see a crisis, what I said earlier in the conversation, a crisis often is a trigger to make changes that in some cases, honestly, should have been done 5 or 10 years ago. And I think if everybody focuses on the positive sides of the crisis and does respect the people who have big struggles, then I think, yeah, we can come better out of the crisis as we went into it.
It seems like this crisis at least does not affect your motivation.
No, that's one of my, I think Churchill said it. I don't know what exactly he said. He said in leadership or no, about winning that, you know, every time you lose, you need to come out of your battle with the mindset to win the next one. And I think that mindset, that mantra of, you know, not victimizing and saying, okay, what did we learn? What has been exposed that didn't work well? How can we improve it? Sure, that's a mindset. And I would really recommend everybody to carry that mindset forward. Because doing nothing and bitching about the bad situation for sure will not help us forward. So there's only one way left: look forward, improve what we can, and yeah, stay motivated.
What a nice way to close an amazing interview, Joost. It was lots of fun.
Thank you.
And very inspiring listening to you. Thank you very much for sharing all this with us so openly. And yeah, I hope we are going to have the next chat in person again in Düsseldorf.
Thank you, Gina. Mm-hmm. And I hope you are doing well with the family and the travel back in a couple of months or whenever it will be. And really appreciate, you know, I think it's great to continue the interviews. People will have questions about their careers. Also other people and career, were thinking about changes. Is it the right moment or do they want to postpone 1 or 2 years? I think always ask those questions and really wish you a lot of success as well, because I think it's great work that you do.
Thank you so much, Joost. I can't wait to see you again. Thanks a lot and speak to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Gina.
Ciao. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and gained some inspirational insights from it. If you did, I would be more than happy if you'd leave me a review or star rating on Apple Podcast. Thanks in advance and have a happy day ahead.